review body says permits are not required, the property owners would be allowable to site a new camp on the same site. Didn't the director's report conclude that the homeless camps don't need land use review and design review? Instead, they are outright permitted uses on the current site and the new site. That means we can have a new campsite at the old site, and an old campsite can be moved to the new site. So the city settled a lawsuit over one camp, and we got two camps and maybe more. This is unconscionable and incompetent display of leadership. Stop, back up before it's too late, before you invite more homeless to our streets, parks, and parking lots. This is a red carpet you're going to have a very hard time rolling up. Be smart, progressive leaders again. Do not sell us short and confuse our commissioner's strong will with what is right and wrong and what is best for our city. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hey, was there a Gail Shepherd? You are you speaking or not? No, thank you. Okay. The next four are Claudette Ross, Michael Gould, Lightning, and Richard Dezio. And they will be followed by Madeline Elder, Chuck White, I believe it is, and Kenneth Barra, and Preston Smith.
Go ahead. So you're on first.
Thank you. Thank you for making this extended time available. My name's Claudette Ross. I lived at Station Place for 8 years. I was one of the first people to move in there. And like my friends that have spoken, it was a great opportunity for me to live with the rent I could afford and in an area that had good mass transportation. Pretty nervous.
That's okay. Go ahead. You're among friends.
You know, I'm going to tell you that this has really devastated and frightened the people at Station Place Tower, that this was dropped on us with no warning. And until today, we have felt rather abandoned by the city council. So I'm glad you're all here today. I want to talk about two things specifically, and that is, and I might need a little help from Commissioner Fritz, because she's the medical person here. These are two fungal infections that are always found in pigeon guano that's had an opportunity to set for more than 3 years. So the first one is histoplasmosis, and the other one is crypto... Maybe you know how to pronounce these, Commissioner Fritz?
I was a psychiatric nurse.
With a sense of humor.
Yes.
Cryptococcus, I do believe it's called. Anyway, this information's easily Googleable. The fungal infections develop when pigeon droppings have sat there for over 3 years. If you've been to the site, you know, it's inundated with pigeon droppings. The problem occurs when the droppings are disturbed. So, for example, a power washing of a sidewalk, any kind of cleaning by the pigeon droppings releases these tiny microns of fungal spores into the air. So the people that are both vulnerable to this are the elderly who have... and or anybody with weakened immune systems. So a lot of people have, a lot of elderly have weakened immune systems from rheumatoid arthritis or cancer, various COPD, various other diseases. The other group that is especially vulnerable is anyone that has a weakened immune system for any other reason, and this would include anybody that has issues with HIV or AIDS. The numbers for those, for that group of people are really pretty scary. And so that is a concern for me, not only for people at Station Place Tower, but if any of the people that will be habiting this encampment over the course of the next year or whatever, that they need to be made aware that they are especially at risk for these two diseases. So I brought some handouts on them. The other thing that I brought is the very detailed cleanup procedures that the federal government, CDC, everybody suggests be used. So,
thank you. I appreciate you bringing that to our attention. Thank you.
Yeah, that's very helpful.
Thanks. Okay, you're next.
My name is Michael Gould. Mayor Hales and council members and commissioners, I appreciate the fact that having the time to actually be able to speak. This, to me, and I have sent emails as well to Commissioner Fritz, and this is really about a leadership thing to me, and as well as just the due process of being aware of this and how we became aware of it. As a resident of Pearl, I think a lot of people have already spoken thus far in regards to, you know, some of the challenges that are faced by the vulnerability of the Station Place residents. But I also look at this as, I mean, as a leadership. I feel like we're taking a temporary step to move right to dream without really, you know, Mayor Hales, you said yourself that tonight we need real solutions. I feel like this is a temporary thing that could become very permanent without a lot of insight and thought and everybody working to it. There's also been mentioned to the public safety that the Right to Dream has done themselves. Okay, that has happened obviously within their camp. I can't speak to it because I don't know all the facts to it. But I am concerned with the fact that I don't believe policing to a nonprofit is, I think this falls within more of our community police department. I don't like letting somebody else have policing responsibilities that are not police officers and the safety that has already been mentioned that it poses around us. The tough decisions that need to be made.
Hey, folks, please, let him continue.
The tough decisions that need to be made and maybe have been come about by past administrations of welcoming more people in. I think we as a city already do a tremendous amount for our vulnerable and our homeless. And I do believe that we are renowned for that, as has been previously mentioned. But in this case, I just feel that this process has been labeled in some ways an us versus them because it is the Pearl. And that is absolutely absurd, an us versus them, the haves and the have-nots. Because if you look at the makeup of the Pearl as a whole, we have a pretty solid mix of low-income people at the Station Place and Section 42 properties and so forth. And yet this is being made about a little bit of us versus them. I don't like the idea of temporary when it seems like a decision has been made and this is just a little bit of a process to either appease those of you or some of the other people in the community. And so I hope that this truly is a chance for you to listen and take the feedback from the community. And I do believe maybe more people should step up to help in a process that could be more permanent. But at least right now, I sure don't like the short-term decision that this is coming to.
Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon, Lightning.
Good afternoon. My name is Lightning. R2-D2, your current site, a privately owned Burnside property, has been extremely successful. Great traffic flow, great visibility. And let's not forget Voodoo Donuts and Dante's Pizza just across the street. The homeless have absolutely benefited from your efforts. Again, R2-D2, a job well done. I applaud you for all your great efforts. But sometimes in life, you must also rely upon your instincts. R2-D2, my instincts say do not move. Do not move. Stand strong at your Burnside location. My reason is very simple. If, in fact, the City of Portland has stated an interest in buying the Burnside Michael Wright's property, and or declaring the site an illegal campground based upon the zoning, that creates a real game changer. If, in fact, the sale goes through to the city, you at that time may be entitled to just compensation on your total relocation cost. Again, in Seattle, City Hall had to relocate a camp called Nicholsville, funded $500,000 for the relocation cost. If you decide to move now to the dark and gloomy, out of sight, out of mind site under the Broadway Bridge currently being offered by Commissioner Fritz, my instinct tells me bad choice. Again, R2-D2, stay where you're at. When you control the Burnside lot, you control the game. One other thing to be said, developer Homer Williams, you are the solution for creating long-term permanent housing for the homeless. You are the solution for getting teams of developers in this city together and have the creative ability to get the job done and get these people into long-term permanent housing with social services provided. You are the solution. You can get the job done. Please do it. Thank you.
Thanks, Lightning. Afternoon.
Mayor Hales, commissioners, my name is Richard DeZale. It's DezeeEEUW, and I'm a resident of the Pearl neighborhood. I'm here to speak on an aspect of this resolution that I've not heard addressed adequately so far. All the discussion to this point has been about the proposed relocation by the city of a number of homeless from one existing location to another. The discussion centers on whether the proposal is wise, ethical, or even legal. What I haven't heard addressed is a definition of the problem you're attempting to solve. Is it helping the homeless as a whole, some portion of the homeless, like the new homeless, the chronic, families, women's, veterans, people with disabilities? Is it to resolve a lawsuit and the associated penalties with that current piece of property? Is it the appearance and safety concerns of the current location on Burnside? Is it the publicity associated with the Lee family reunion? What exactly is the problem that's being solved here? The question I've heard posed by proponents of the resolution is, well, what is your solution? What solution do you have? And here's mine is, first, define the problem, establish criteria for selecting a solution to the problem, identify the options, select an option and implement the option, and do all of this with input from all of the affected parties. The city has always had cooperation and support of the Pearl neighborhood in these matters, as evidenced by more than 30% of our residents are low income. We also see the irony of being viewed as being an enclave of privilege, despite the fact that family income in the Pearl is lower than the city as a whole. My message to the city is that if you want our cooperation in solving problems such as this, act like it.
Thank you very much.
The next four are Madeline Elder, Chuck White, Kenneth T. Baca, and Preston Smith. Okay, let's go ahead and go. Anthony Jensen, you can come on up now. And then they'll be followed by Rick Sohn, Mike O'Callaghan, Joseph Gordon, and Joel Sievers.
Great, welcome. Go ahead.
Hi, Mayor Hills and City Commissioners. My name is Madeline Elder. I'm President of Communications Workers of America, Local 7901, here in Portland. CWA members in Portland have suffered massive job losses in the last 12 years, first due to the dot-com bust in 2001, then due to offshoring of call center work, and finally due to the housing bust of 2008. Those jobs lost had middle-class wages and benefits and have not been replaced with equivalent jobs since. Many of my laid-off members have lost their homes. Some of them are houseless, living on friends' couches or in their cars, seeking work or working jobs without sufficient pay to afford housing. With the increasing gap between the rich and the rest of us, we are all one or two paychecks away from houselessness. R2D2 is a model of how the homeless in this city can organize themselves, ban alcohol and drugs, protect and preserve families. This last is a major issue for CWA and our laid-off members. Breaking up families happens when there isn't enough emergency or low-income housing and when they are separated according to gender in the current situations that we have mostly here in the city of Portland. Because of this, CWA is totally in support of Right to Dream 2, moving to a new location until such time as the developers in this city and the city council find the time, the money, and the energy to really solve the problem of, one, no jobs, two, jobs that don't support housing, three, enough housing so that families can stay together when they're in an emergency situation. We support Commissioner Fritz's proposal 100%, and we urge City Council to support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Good afternoon.
All right, my name is Anthony Jensen, and I'm pretty young, and I'm just voicing my opinion, and it's very biased. I'm just saying that. All right, so I really appreciate all the resources and everything. It's really a great help, and I've been on the streets for a while. But as a state and country that represents quote-unquote freedom, in my opinion, the meaning has been perverted, and we have forgotten what matters, like love, sharing, and equality. I've observed, like, everyday inequality, even with forces that are supposed to mediate and serve and protect, abuse their positions in what seems to be, in my perception, to hold down poverty. And, yeah, that's just where I stand.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Kenneth Baca. Good afternoon, Charlie Hales and commissioners. First of all, I would like to commend Amanda Fritz on her proposal and her work that she's done on this. What I have to say about this is this statement that I prepared. It's, these hearings today are about the homeless. Let's not forget that. The encampment right to dream is the issue and needs to be addressed. Fritz may not be the housing commissioner, but has proposed a plan and a unique idea in providing shelter for Portland's homeless citizens. However, both parties need to come to some sort of compromise. The Pearl District citizens have attorneys to voice their concerns and spout their theories as to how and why these hearings are taking place, and definitely have an agenda to rid the homeless from their area of living. Making statements by saying that you're destroying the city's faith and integrity and competency of city's government, only to intimidate Mr. Hales, and force a decision in favor of the Pearl District's residents, this is not a faulty plan to make a lawsuit go away. This is by far the most reasonable plan, providing local services and resources for these citizens. Remember, these are citizens of Portland. Homeless or not, they live in Portland and are citizens and Oregonians. They have the right to dream. They have the right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. They are not. What is at stake here is the people who need a place to sleep. They are not pawns in a city war between the rich and city planners. The problem will just not go away, and out of sight and out of mind ideas are not the answer. This proposal, I believe, is in good faith at addressing Portland's homeless issue and is by far the best on the table. Mayor Hales, please listen to the cries and pleas of our most needy citizens. Help provide them with a place to sleep and be safe. Provide them with resources and a place to rest. This will be by far the best way to display your faith and integrity in city government, not by heeding the threats and warnings of a social and rich society. My name is Kenneth Baca, and I am homeless, and this place would provide me a safe place to sleep and a right to dream. The areas of Amtrak and Greyhound, as we've already seen, these people have been cohabitating for several years. To bring this tent city underneath the bridge, it may be just a temporary fix, but it is a fix. It is something. It is something that they're going to need this winter. And it's not permanent. It may be only temporary. But we already coexist in this area. The Pearl District have citizens. They have mentally ill people in housing. Well, mentally ill people that are homeless also need a right to some sort of housing, also need some place to sleep. And that's all I say. I urge that you guys vote a yes to this proposal and do something about the homelessness in Portland. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
My name is Preston Smith. I'm a resident of the Pearl. I'm not too happy with the way this has proceeded so far. I do not think it's a good model of due course. However, I support the change that you're making to Station Place. I've been by the current location of Right to Dream 2 on Burnside, and I find it to be very neat, clean, orderly, and a model of good management. And it has an exemplary police record. And looking at the new site, I see that that's not really a model of prime real estate. For example, it backs up on the south side to the Postal Service's garages immediately adjacent, where they repair all of their vehicles. One thing they do is change motor oil. Motor oil is known to be a carcinogen, so I suspect that there's probably relatively high levels of toxic contamination in the area, which is another reason why I don't think it's the best place for people to be living, but apparently it's acceptable for this camp. I support the move to the new location. I do not think that it's a threat to the neighborhood. And I believe that for the neighbors, the current residents in the neighborhood, as well as the homeless, it's a better solution than the alternative, which is sleeping on doorways and in the streets. Now, some people have said that we should be building more shelters for the homeless. That's true, but that's a long-term solution. It's expensive. It's going to take time. And it just is not in the cards in the current economic and political climate. So I don't think that's part of the long-term plan, but it should not be part of the plan for this winter.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all. Okay, next four, please.
We're going to go with Christy White, Rick Sohn, Mike O'Callaghan, and Joseph Gordon. And they'll be followed by Joel Sievers, Scott Omland, Keith Dubanovich, and H. David Silverman.
Why don't you three go ahead, and then we'll let Christy go last, because I think we may have council questions for her. So go ahead.
Okay. Commissioners and Mayor, my name is Rick Sohn. How to address homelessness. Michael Beckman, director of Heading Home Hennepin, serves more than 1,600 families in Minneapolis, Minnesota metro area. He wrote the following to me this week. Here in our community, we don't believe nor do we feel it necessary to set up camps for people who cannot afford housing. We do offer 24-hour shelter and meals for all who lose their housing. Frankly, the idea of camps for people is below our standard of care. We have a very strong outreach present and enough emergency shelter beds for almost 2,000 people. We spend around $12 million in county taxes to provide shelter. Shelter is a right in our community for most. All people are housable, even those who use drugs and alcohol daily and who have lots of personal vulnerabilities. The Amherst Wilder Foundation spent $42.8 million in 2012 for vulnerable people of the St. Paul metro area. These two are good examples for you and all Oregonians to example. The Lovejoy Ramp is 2.5 times larger than the 4th and Birdside Camp with its 100 to 150 residents. The new Lovejoy site could hold 300 to 375 people. I recommend you slow down your process and provide some leadership. If you move ahead, 1, strictly limit the number of people to 100, as you said. 2, regulate sleeping and loitering in the adjacent vacant and covered areas. Otherwise, 350 people could easily become much, much more. 3, enact a 2-year sunset provision. And within the 2-year window, use your budget surplus to match grants for planning and program solutions beyond homelessness. Incentivize partners to provide indoor homeless space for R2-D2 and others. Be proud of shutting the camp down. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. There is much more detail in my written testimony, and I'll answer questions if you like.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for providing your written testimony as well. Great.
Hello, I'm Michael O'Callaghan. Amanda, I want to commend you, and I want to commend R2-D2 for raising this issue to the public consciousness. It's about time, okay? I've been unhoused mostly for 10 years. I was a co-creator of R2-D2, and I lived there full-time for 4 months, so I have a little dog in the fight, if you will. I'm presently unhoused. My concern is what I call shelterlessness. Okay, Mary, you talked about the thousands of people on the street. And as I explained to you, but I want to explain to all these people here, I took a survey last time. There were 1,453 2 years ago. I was counted in that survey for the first time, so I went around and I polled people for 2 weeks. First question, are you sleeping without shelter? If the answer was yes, were you included in the survey? Okay, I've got 75 yeses, and I got 15 people that were included in the survey. The survey missed the shelterless by a factor of 5. Okay, we have approximately 7,000 people every night sleeping out in Portland. Every night sleeping out, okay? You talk about fear. These people talk about fear, okay? There was a stabbing about 2 blocks away from where I live. Okay, then just I explained to you, I had my neighbor come down the street with blood all over him, with a cut on him, beaten on the head. He was robbed. 4 people jumped him. Talk about fear. Okay, we want to be safe. Right to Dream provides a safe place for people. Okay? Let us be safe just like you all are. Okay? And Right to Dream is a good neighbor. Okay? I live there. We didn't have thefts. We didn't have all these problems. Okay? It's a good, clean community. And thank you again for considering this. I'll discuss more later.
Thank you very much.
Hello. My name is Joseph Gordon. To some, they know me as Tequila. I've been homeless on the streets of Portland for 2 years now. I've been coming on and off city hall on and off every Wednesday for about a couple while, for 2 years. And I'm just glad finally some new faces are here. You know, I just love to hear that and see that. And I want to thank the city because me and my significant other, we're walking around the city with a $2,000 income every month. And we don't do drugs or alcohol or drink. And because why? When the city had to send someone, they volunteered to come with us to see why couldn't we find housing. And the reason why, there was no housing for us here. But now at the end of this month, we got done paying our deposits. We had to pay 2 deposits of $840 each, and next month rent $840, which we could afford. And now we'll have a home in November 1st. And we paid for that, not Join, not CCC or anything else. And for people to say they're concerned about, you know, all about the health benefits of bird feces and everything else. When you was walking over me, was you concerned? I've been here for 2 years. I have not heard anybody concerned about me before. Why don't you just say it? Because what I see it as, I'm sorry, in the 1950s and the 60s, and when the president on the TV was saying, if we don't fix these problems now, there's going to be left on to the generation to come. I am that generation, and I'm pissed off. So when you want to blame other people, blame yourselves because you sat there and thought of nothing but what I'm hearing all today from the people who's totally against RTD2 and everything. It's about me, 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 me. Because if it's not, I would have seen your faces at least at one protest. We have a government that's shut down. 15% of it's shut down. And you sit here, want to fight against poor people or your local government. So honestly, you should be a goddamn ashamed of yourselves.
My name is Christy White. I represent Williams and Dame, Hoyt, Ziva, and Pearl District Neighborhood Association. If it was my preference and I was allowed to do it, I'd concede all my time to Homer Williams after Lightning's speech, because I think we need to start talking about solutions. But in the meantime, I have some obligations on the record. If the city proceeds with this relocation, it will be in violation of the zoning code. That is not a difficult conclusion. It is a simple analytical exercise. I have little time, so I will give you 2 of many examples. The rest of the argument is contained in the brief before you. A homeless campsite is not a community service use. The characteristic section refers to mass shelters or short-term housing as community service use, but the ZCL goes to great effort to conclude the campsite is neither of these. The ZCL states, quote, multiple temporary tents on the site are not like a single open sleeping area or multiple sleeping areas separated by non-permanent partitions, characteristic of a mass shelter. This section of the ZCL shows the contrived nature of the opinion. The ZCL defines the tents as temporary or non-permanent. They are therefore multiple sleeping areas separated by non-permanent partitions. But such a classification would make the tent camp a mass shelter. If it's a mass shelter, it's subject to conditional use review and other development standards that it can't satisfy. So the ZCL claims it can't be a mass shelter. The city can't have it both ways. You either use the characteristic statement to conclude that it's a mass shelter subject to conditional use review, or it's not, and it's prohibited. Another fatal flaw, the opinion states that the camp will constitute exterior alterations but is exempt from design review because it doesn't require a building permit. The code clearly says that all changes in the type or number of uses require a building permit. The site is now a parking lot. The new use is a community service use. Going from parking to community service is a change in the type of use. It requires a building permit. This is rudimentary analysis. Building permit requires design review. If this makes sense to you, it should. This is how the city has run itself since the inception of the zoning code. When you change the use on a site, change the type of use, put in a new use, every time this happens, the city is required a building permit. To hear BDS say that the building permit is not defined, so these changes don't require a building permit, is going to be interesting news to most of my clients. You might think these are legal issues for the city attorney's office, but they're not just legal issues. They're issues that threaten the legitimacy of regulatory authority. They threaten the social and economic stability of our downtown. We have a homeless problem. There's no question about it. None of my clients are anti-homeless. So if you want to site tents in the city of Portland to accommodate homeless populations, go through a code amendment process. Do it legitimately. Tell us when they're allowed, where they're allowed, under what zones they're allowed, and for how long they're allowed. Other cities have done that. If that's what you want to do, do. We'll participate and we'll help. The ZCL dismantles that social contract, and it must be rejected for all these reasons. Lastly, ask yourself, have you interpreted or applied a land use regulation in this proceeding? Have you exercised even a little discretion? If you have, you're making a land use decision. There's a long line of cases that leave no question that this is a land use decision. As such, I have to do this in my brief, raise several procedural objections, including failure to notice in the way the code requires under 197763, failure to provide a staff report 7 days before the hearing, and the right to request a continuance of this hearing, which I will do today. You know me. I don't want to be in this position. I usually come to you with solutions. For decades, we have worked hand in hand with the city to solve problems, not create them. The circumstances we find ourselves in leave us with no option. I thank you for your time.
Thank you. We have your brief, Ms. White. Any questions for Ms. White now? All right, thank you very much.
The next four are Joel Severs, Scott Omlid, Keith Dubanovich, and H. David Silverman. And they will be followed by Kathy Street, Kathy Hansen, Bryce Steffener, and Cameron Witten.
Hey, Joel, go ahead.
My name is Joel Severs, and I don't really know what to say. Oh, we have an agenda for tomorrow. let's see. I believe whatever Right to Dream wants to do, Right to Dream can do. And to fight against homeless people, or we don't want homeless people living by us, I find that like very selfish. Low-income housing in the Pearl District? I think not. I don't see places that are $350, $400 a month. I see places that are worth the thousands a month. And if you don't feel well about your living situation, you shouldn't have chose a $25,000 up to $85,000 condo. sorry. Yeah, that's pretty much all I have.
Thank you. Thanks. Go ahead.
Right on.
All right. Go ahead, please.
Hi, my name is H. David Silverman. Mayor Hales, commissioners, thank you for calling this hearing today. I apologize if I go over some plowed ground already, but I'm here today to express my disappointment and frustration with the recent actions undertaken by Commissioner Fritz and Portland's Bureau of Development Service regarding the Right to Dream 2 encampment. While some would like to use homelessness and the challenge of the growing economic inequality of our nation state and city as the basis for the justification for moving the encampment, the heart of this matter, unfortunately, doesn't have much to do with either. Others would like to cast the residents of the Pearl as the wealthy 1% that receive tax breaks and continue to grow their wealth at the expense of others. Their argument is one of class warfare, and I find it offensive. We all know the Pearl District was not built for the wealthy and is the most economically diverse neighborhood in Portland. But again, this is not even germane to the resolution that you'll be voting on today. The real issue before you is how do we choose, as a city, to govern ourselves, and whether or not the rules that we choose to apply to citizens, nonprofits, and for-profit businesses also apply to the city of Portland. To have two sets of rules, one that applies to the city and another that applies to everyone else, is just plain wrong. To force the Bureau of Development Service to find a justification to circumvent zoning regulations is just plain wrong. And to call the Right to Dream to encampment community services is intellectually dishonest at best and a bald-faced lie at worst. Portland has a long history of very structured zoning laws. It has served the city well and is one of the reasons we're admired. We have vibrant neighborhoods with great community involvement. We have a sense of fairness. And while we may not always agree with everything that happens in the city, we can all feel that the process was honest and the rules were applied evenly. And Mr. Mayor, I'm hopeful that you can see there is not much difference between your having evicted campers from in front of City Hall and under the Morrison Bridge a couple days ago and why there should not be an encampment under the Broadway Bridge. Let us be honest with ourselves. Both are our legal and neither are community services. I moved here from New York to the Pearl District 15 years ago, before it was even a neighborhood, and I was an early adopter, and I was comforted that my choice to live in the Pearl District was a good one, as the city of Portland was renowned for its planning, citizen involvement, and structured zoning laws. And up until this August, Portland lived up to that reputation.
Thank you. Afternoon.
Mayor Hales, members of the City Council, my name is Keith Dubanovich. I am counsel to the Pearl Hotel Investors, Hoyt Street Properties, the Pearl District Neighborhood Association, and Zeba Design. We've provided a letter to the council and to the Development Commission a few days ago, which explains our view that there are some substantial legal reasons why you cannot convert Lot 7 from the use as a parking lot to something other than that. Let me simply summarize a little background. As many of you may remember, years ago, the Pearl District was not a fancy neighborhood. It was very run down. It was decrepit. Crime was rampant, and nobody was willing to move anywhere near it. Well, in order to encourage investment in the Pearl District, business leaders, the council members, and the Development Commission got together, and they put together a very lengthy document called the Pearl District Development Plan. It's probably 100 or so pages long. And in that plan, the city decided it had a vision for the Pearl District. That vision at that time did not include tent camping anywhere in the Pearl District. Now, when the decision was to go further and actually start doing some development, in order to do that, the city entered into contracts with developers. And in my case, my clients entered into what's called a design and development agreement. It's a lengthy document that spells out exactly what every single piece of property in that area can be used for. And as this indicates, parking under bridge. Now, why is that significant? My clients have invested over $70 million in that neighborhood in reliance upon the representation that there would be parking under the bridge. If they were told that there would be tent camps under that bridge, they may very well never have invested one red penny in that neighborhood. Now, whether you agree with that analysis or not, the fact of the matter is that the people that have invested a lot of time and effort in developing the Pearl District did so with a lot of planning. Now, to be honest, developing public policy with threats of lawsuits is not a good way to do it. In closing, what I would like to do is to participate with all of the stakeholders that really have an interest here in forming a solution to the plight of our homelessness. You folks have done that. We have a 10-year plan. And this effort takes this plan, puts it on the shelf, and forgets about it. Now, maybe it's not 100% effective, but the fact of the matter is that a lot of time and effort has gone into developing that plan, and with good reason. What we need is a solution that increases, not diminishes, access to a warm, dry bed. increases, not diminishes, access to a healthy meal and medical care. Increases, not diminishes, access to education and other services to help these people get on their feet. This resolution does not do that.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. My name is Scott Omlid. I've lived in the Pearl District for 13 years. I moved here from Eugene, and there was nothing but fields north of Lovejoy at that time. I'm raising an objection as to the lack of process, the legality of the proposal, and the wisdom of this decision. I've read the formal report from the director of the Bureau of Development Services, where he concludes that the homeless camp is permitted as a community service under the Portland Zoning Code, principally because the camp is transitory and provides so little to achieve the legal requirements of habitability that it cannot be considered a structure. The director reasons that because nothing new will be constructed, there's nothing to consider for design review process. This conclusion is extraordinary. It is evident in reading the director's report as a whole that it is biased and intended to reach a desired result. There is a conflict of interest here since moving the camp now appears to be an essential element of the city's objective to settle the lawsuit. The director's report is tainted by this conflict. The report has serious ramifications for Portland's future. Community services are allowed in the commercial zones as long as they do not involve short-term living or a mass shelter. Based on the director's report, the Right to Dream 2 camp would be perfectly legal where it currently is located. The director's report points out that the camp will have no requirements for admission or occupancy. Portland has a large population of younger street people who travel in packs, hang out on the sidewalks, and live on the streets by choice. And they have various forms of aggressive behavior. What is to keep this group from taking over the camp? What is to prevent them from forming their own organization, doing the same thing? In closing, this is not the way to create policy or establish long-term solutions. The Pearl District neighborhood does not pretend to have the right to forbid this action. What we want is for the camp to be subject to the requirements of the city code. You should disapprove this plan and go back to the drawing board. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Thanks.
Next four are Kathy Street, Kathy Hansen, Bryce Steffener, and Cameron Whitten. And they'll be followed by J.J. Bailey, Kadir, I believe the last name is Wake, Greg Close, and Patty Gardner.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Hi. I must say I've lived in Oregon my whole life. I grew up in Hillsboro. I've never been in this building, and it's really beautiful.
Welcome. Don't make this the last time.
Well, maybe the last time for something like this, let's hope. My name is Kathleen Street. I've lived in the Pearl District for 10 years. It's always been my dream to live in the city, and today I'm representing the Bridgeport Condominiums Owners Association, and they've asked me to come in and make a statement to you about our feelings. You have letters that we have sent to you already, but I'll submit them to the clerk just in case. Those who spoke before me may be strangers, acquaintances, friends, or neighbors. We are all here together following a process so that we can voice our concerns. Today we come to speak to the city that works, to the leaders who were voted into office by people who believed that the rules were made to be followed by everyone, that you would now hide behind a thinly veiled attempt to make us believe that you're helping the homeless by providing them with a temporary living situation that involves tents under a bridge in the winter in Oregon is a slap in the face of progressive thinking people. That you point your fingers at us, the neighborhood, saying your hands are tied and asking us now how we would solve the problem is disingenuous. We would have followed the rules. We would answer the city back by saying, let's solve this problem together. Our neighborhood is full of intelligent, highly creative, and visionary people of all income levels and ages who believe in the efforts that this city has made to make things happen in a collaborative way. Yes, there will be disagreement, but the key is not only to try to hear what people have to say. You must also listen to what the stakeholders have to say while still following the rules. Discarding the rules to suit your own end game does not define leadership. You have no respect for the people or the responsibility to uphold the process that you yourselves have campaigned on. We can find no openness, no truthfulness, and no integrity here. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Yes, my name is Kathy Hansen. I live in the Pearl District. Many of the points in my testimony have already been given, and I will try and avoid redundancy. I would say that when I moved to Oregon in 1978, all the urban neighborhoods were in sad disrepair, especially on the east side. I lived in Buckman from 1980 until 2003, and I know that this livability of Portland has been built through the collaborative efforts of both government and thousands of hours of volunteers who in Irvington and Buckman preserved housing and respected the historic nature of Portland neighborhoods. And we feel that this is going to be put at jeopardy. This good work is going to be jeopardized by this decision. Amanda has said that this is a pilot program, and so where might the next site be? And in closing, I'll just say I lived a block from St. Francis Dining Hall for 20 years, and I know apparently better than some of your experience what the ramifications are for citing a group within an existing community without the advice and consent of that community. And I think we can do better through a longer, more collaborative process. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Good afternoon.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Bryce Stevens, and I'm a principal in multi-services. We manage many of the properties in the Pearl. We represent 1,232 living units down there. And I'm here to testify today. Mayor, you started this hearing by talking about the Portland Way. Let me also back up and say I've been on the PDNA board and been involved in a lot of the design land use issues in the neighborhood since its inception, and my father was before me. When you talked about the Portland Way, what has happened here is not the Portland Way. In my job, we manage mixed-use high-rise buildings. We often run into conflict between commercial and residential uses. It's our job to seek out solutions that are win-win. What I see here today is not just two groups, the rich and the poor, divided, but a whole economic stratosphere divided over this issue because the appropriate priorities have not been brought together to discuss the issue in an open public process. This process was conceived behind closed doors, and this is apparent in the comments I've read in the paper. We met yesterday. I asked you if this decision had already been made. You said it had not, but that is inconsistent with the way the majority of the people I represent feel about it. I have a stack of letters here to give to you at the end of the day that I've received. I spent the last week and a half spending 80% of my time answering concerns, questions of the people I represent in the neighborhood. And so my message to you today is to back up, redo the process, do it the right way that we've done it in the neighborhood from the inception, and let's get this right so that all the parties can come together and work towards a solution. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, Mayor. Hello. Is that better? Is that good, Joanne?
No, you're on now.
Hello. Hi, Mayor Hells. Hello, City Council. Thank you for the permission to testify today. My name is Cameron Witten, CameronWhiteten. And I'm fortunate enough to live in the Northwest District neighborhood, about 20 blocks away from this mentioned parcel of land, Block 7. And I've been watching Right to Dream 2 since its initial inception in October 9th of 2011. And when it first started, it created this very necessary, very interesting conversation that we need in our community. Despite Right to Dream 2 having permission from the property owner. I might have to steal somebody's microphone.
That
I don't
thing,
like this one.
That thing fades in and out. If you could slide over to the next one. Yeah, one of these days we'll spring for a new sound system in here. Yeah, I know, but we'll spring for one that works.
Hello? Hello? Uh-oh, there we go. All right, so.
Sorry for the interruption in your train of thought, but go ahead.
Sit back a little bit from that.
All right, is that good?
Yeah, that should be good.
Thank you. So I was speaking about, started the conversation, despite having permission from the property owner to be there, and despite seasoned homeless advocates from organizing with Dignity Village who came to this parcel, there were many concerns that were brought up, whether it was about substance abuse, whether it was about crime, or someone suffering from mental health crisis was going to attack some vulnerable citizen. There were a lot of concerns that happened. For two whole years, I watched patiently, seeing if anything at all remotely like that was going to happen. And in 2 years, there was never a single complaint or call to our police bureau that was directly linked to Right to Dream 2. Instead, what I saw was 71 individuals who were able to find jobs, 76 individuals who were able to move on into permanent housing. There were 10 people who were able to get their kids back from the child system. There were 6 people who were able to go to school, 5 people who were able to kick themselves off of substance abuse. And by doing this, they only used about $15,000 worth of an operating budget every year. And so it's been so fascinating to see how much impact they were able to make without having to come to any of our institutions asking for money. They all did it by themselves. They were self-governed. And can I finish? Thank you. I'll try to finish, please. And also, in addition to that, I've seen them not advocate just for themselves, but for so many other communities and organizations in this region, such as the Vos Day Laborers Center, or such as Sisters of the Road, or they even partnered to help put on the Homeless Walk of Day of Awareness with the New City Initiative. I've also seen them attend the sidewalk use committees that were hosted by Commissioner Fritz here. I've seen them involved with the livability committees in Chinatown. And they've always been transparent and approachable and wanting to find solutions. And so for them, it's always been wanting to be a welcoming presence in the community, wanting to foster community and to build that and to be a good neighbor. And so now we are talking about Right to Dream 2 possibly being moved less than half a mile away. And the big difference that's happening here today is that city officials have actually been working and partnering with Right to Dream 2 to build a concrete social contract to really ensure livability and safety with the presence of Right to Dream 2 that's going to be governed by a nonprofit that is providing for our community. And so I want to thank Commissioner Fritz, who's really allowed us to move forward to look for solutions. And I want to thank Mayor Hales, who, while talking with the community while running for mayor, he was very vocal about recognizing the value that has been built by Right to Dream 2 over the past 2 years. I want to thank Commissioner Saltzman, Commissioner Novick, who are also very good advocates for our most vulnerable and are great advocates for public health. And so it's with your guidance, with the guidance of all the other nonprofits that we have in the community working on the issues of housing and livability, that we're in such a critical moment that we can look at Right to Dream 2 and see that they have an opportunity to be recognized as being a partner within our safety net. And that's exactly where they belong. We have so much that we're providing, whether it's transitional housing, whether it's short-term rental assistance, whether it's supportive housing or shelters, but we have a void. We have a place where people who are on the streets, already under bridges, already in doorways, already in many unsafe areas, who do not have a place where they can find their voice, where they do not feel represented. And now that Right to Dream 2 has stepped in to fill that void, we are seeing progress. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you.
The next four are J.J. Bailey, Greg Close, Patty Gardner, and Tiffany Schweitzer. J.J. Bailey, Greg Close, Patty Gardner, Tiffany Schweitzer. Let's go with John Nickel, Christopher Hanford.
Got one. There you go.
Oh, there's one. There's three. Sorry.
Carla, there are some folks in the Lovejoy room, so, and yeah, also people upstairs, so we'll call them again, right?
Okay, I'm calling the next four, so if you would listen, and we'll try to get those people in the other room.
Let me see if she's speaking. Hold on.
Excuse me. Can you hold on? Can you hold on just a moment so I can get the next four so they can come over? Are you speaking?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. After them, let's go with John Nickel, Christopher Hanford, Scott Rice, and Laura Finn. Sorry.
Okay, great. Now go ahead.
My name is Greg Close. I'm with Wise Investment Services Company. I'm here representing Zeba Design and the four tenants that occupy Zeba's building adjacent to the proposed camp location. I've just handed for the record a memorandum describing a fairly detailed bit of economic ramifications to Zeba and its tenants, both business issues and real estate values, lost rentals, and so on and so forth, from a study that we've conducted that might show economic damage to Zeba and their buildings and their tenants. But I'm not here to talk about that. I don't have a written agenda, so I want to react to some of the testimony that's been provided today and send a message to you all. Our friend Tequila is not the only person in this room who's pissed off, frankly, council members. I am pissed off. Personally, I'm a business person, and I grind it out every day taking care of my clients and being a good steward in this community and being part of the fabric of this community. And I've done that on the basis. Now, partly the reason that I'm pissed off is because you all, every one of you, through this process, has created what one of the speakers called class warfare. And you are making me, maybe respect or not, a citizen of this community, feel with great apprehension about speaking on behalf of my clients economically. When, in fact, since 1989, I have continuously volunteered as a board member for Mental Health Services West, for Unity, and Cascadia Today, uninterrupted, and I chaired Mental Health West for 10 years. And in that amount of time, we put up 2,000 beds in this city addressing shelter issues and the homeless, mentally ill. And every time we did one of those, we had to grind out a difficult land use and approvals process, but we always did it. We always did it the right way. If you want a candidate for a contentious land use, look at the Royal Palm. The Royal Palm went in next to the Chinese Classical Garden, and it was a massive undertaking. It took us 2 years just to put together a good neighbor agreement, but we did it the right way. We did it in full public view. We did it. We rolled our sleeves up, and we worked it. It took effort, and now here I am after all of that volunteer time continuously for 24 years feeling like I'm not an advocate for the homeless. I'm not an advocate for the low income. You all have circumvented the process in a most egregious way, and I'm here to beg you to call a halt to this process and let those of us who are experienced in doing these kinds of things get together as a group of stakeholders and bring real resources to bear. Let us take the legal money that we've allocated to fight you and other resources and bring it to bear on this problem so that we can rejoin like Portland does. We cannot have class warfare. What am I? And I've got five businesses that I have to report to. One of those businesses is a young woman who scraped and paid her way through school. She's a doctor of chiropractic. She worked for 7 years in the industry, scraped some money together, and opened 2 years ago a small wellness clinic right around the other side of the parking structure. She does not have high margins. A great majority of her clientele is female. She is freaked out. She should be living the American dream. She has every right, just like everyone else does, to make a living. She's down there grinding it out every day, and her business will fail. And that's going to create lower income in my building. And then I'm going to have to answer to my landlord, what are we going to do when the bank comes calling and we default on our loan? These ramifications are significant. They are not immaterial. And we should not be spending our time worrying about these people. We should be spending our time working on a real solution. I got to tell you, we heard about this 30 days ago because someone stopped by our building and said, hey, man, watch out. There's something coming. So let us get it together, commissioners. We have that opportunity right here. Thanks for the extra time.
Thank you. Okay. So.
Hi, my name is Patricia Gardner here, and I'm here on behalf of the Pearl District Neighborhood